It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Breaking the cycle of jail and prison reentry is not an easy process, especially for repeat offenders. There are lifestyle choices that need to be considered and oftentimes avoided, but that requires the right behavioral coaching and support. The Allegheny County Jail runs a collaborative program with Pittsburgh Mercy Health System, which was recently evaluated by the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C., and found to successfully reduce recidivism. So how does it work? I'm joined now in Studio A by Karen Cordero, Team Leader, Prevention Intervention Services for Pittsburgh Mercy Health System. Karen Cordero, it's good to have you with us. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Also with us is Darrell Robinson from the Point Breeze area of Pittsburgh. He's a repeat offender currently on work release and going through the collaborative program. He's also enrolled in the mechatronics program at Community College of Allegheny County. Darrell Robinson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH, #EPLive. Karen Cordero, explain how this collaborative program between the Allegheny County Jail and the Pittsburgh Mercy Health System works.
Okay. Well, Pittsburgh Mercy Health System is only one agency that's a part of a collaborative. There are many agencies involved. We became involved early in the beginning in 2010, providing cognitive behavioral change techniques through the Reentry Center. The Reentry Center is where the services are provided in the jail. And then we also provide follow-up services at a number of different sites and locations, like the one where Darrell is. And that's breaking free the power of choice. So we have two cognitive behavioral change programs.
How was this created? Who decided that at some point, looking at recidivism issues, that there needed to be a different approach?
Well, Thinking for a Change was created by Juliana Taimans and Barry Glick and Jack Bush, all PhDs working in the correction system. And I believe it was developed in the late 1990s, like around 1997. And the theory being that if they could take the same type of principles used in cognitive behavioral theory, in other words, the way I think about something, the way I feel about something directly leads to my choices, in other words, the behavior that I become involved in. And if I want to change that behavior, I change that by behavior by controlling my thinking.
As you describe the approach to these issues, it really seems like we're in a period of enlightenment about these issues that mm-hmm. years ago nobody would have cared. It's a thought mm-hmm. that's occurring to me that, you know, you heard that mentality, you know, lock the cell and throw away the key,
kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Tough on crime.
Right,
yeah.
Right. That didn't really work, did it?
It didn't work. You know, it didn't work. So I believe a lot of research was put into what is going to work. Amy Kroll, the director of reentry, was just saying to me this morning that no one ever thought a program like this was going to work in a county corrections facility because the sentences aren't long enough, in other words. And we've proven them wrong.
And I want to get to Darrell, and obviously I have more questions for you as well, Karen. But mm-hmm. let's go to the phones. We already have somebody who wants to join the conversation. We have Berta in Pittsburgh. Yes. Hi, Berta. You're on the air. Welcome.
Okay.
Go ahead with your comment or question.
Okay. I'm really interested in this program, too, because my daughter worked for Critical Resistance in San Francisco. And I was wondering if you were in touch with them because I deal with the recidivism as well as other prison problems. They have offices in San Francisco, New York, and New Orleans.
Okay, so Critical Resistance. What about that, Karen?
What I can say, I don't know about Critical Resistance, but what I can say is Thinking for a Change is an evidence based program. It's all over the country. You can go on their website and find all kind of information about it.
Okay, well, Berta, thank you for chiming in. 412-246-2002, the number to call to join the conversation. Maybe you know somebody who has been in this particular program, and maybe you have come through it yourself. Describe what your experience has been like, how it helped you. We'd love to have you share your story with us, as Darrell Robinson is about to. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. And Darrell, before I ask you how you ended up in this program, how did you end up in jail?
Well, I was arrested for possession with intent to deliver back in April of 2013, and I got sentenced February of 2014.
So possession meaning possession of some controlled substance, yeah, drugs or narcotics?
Illegal substances.
Mm-hmm. And what happened, if I may ask, that led you down this particular path?
Well, I was in a rough stretch of my life. I had two kids, and I was working, and working wasn't paying the bills. So I resorted to things that I previously knew to get money to raise my family.
So you were in a situation where you have a couple of kids, and if I may ask, were you married?
No.
So you have a couple of children. Did you have a partner who was at least helping you raise
yes,
the children?
Absolutely.
And of course, we all know how difficult it is to make ends meet, whether you have children or not. In this case, you've got some mouths to feed, and you're trying to make it in society. Did you have an education at that particular point in time?
Yeah, I finished high school. I had a high school diploma. I tried CCAC for business management when I first graduated high school, but I went through a point where I had a lot of personal deaths in my family, and that was hard for me to continue school going through that. That was the first time I dealt with that in my life.
Deaths in the family?
Yes, deaths in the family and with close friends. So I dropped out of school and I just started working. And then a year later, my girlfriend at the time, she got pregnant with identical twin boys.
So you have these two children that come into your life. And certainly school is difficult or can be under any circumstances, let alone when you're dealing with some personal problems and probably a situational depression in your case.
Mm-hmm.
So you're out there and it's not easy finding work. Times are tough. And what were you doing? What were you out working at?
I was doing housekeeping at a nursing home facility.
Some crazy hours there?
Nah, not really.
Not really?
Yeah, it wasn't cutting it.
It wasn't cutting it. So you weren't getting enough hours or enough work or just enough money?
Just enough money, yeah.
So describe the thought process. Describe what leads you to make the decision that, you know, obviously there's some desperation there, but you know, you're kind of rolling the dice when you delve into doing something that's illegal. At what point does the switch flip, and do you say to yourself, I've got to do this?
Well, the switch flips when you're like, at ends meet. For me, I can't speak on everybody, but from my personal experiences, I was at ends meet. I was down. I was depressed, and I knew that I could take this amount of money and make this amount of money in a certain amount of time, and I didn't have to report to anybody or look over my back for anybody to say do this or do that. I know I can just do this and do that, and I'll have what I need.
Were you thinking about the risk? Were you thinking about, you know, if I do this, I could end up in jail? Was that on your mind?
Absolutely. There's certain things that come with the lifestyle. You can either go to jail, in the hospital, or end up dead. You know what I mean? But when you're out there, you have to play all your cards. You got to make, it's like a chess move. You got to make your next move, your best move. So I felt like I did that to a certain extent. And then when I got arrested, I felt like I wasn't following my own code that I set for myself. So that's when I got arrested, I just fell back completely. Like, all right, I did what I did. Now my time's over.
Your time's over. You thought, what do you mean by that?
I mean, my time in the drug game was over. I told myself once I get arrested and I go to jail, then if I go back out there doing what I did previously, only thing that is going to happen is the time's going to get longer and longer and longer. And I can't be away from my kids longer and longer and longer. I want to watch them grow up. And it's hard. I've only been in prison for 8 months now, and it's already hard. These past 8 months been really hard not seeing my kids. I see them once a week, but that's not enough. That's nothing. They're 5 years old. They're grown. They're starting to ask questions on where I'm at and different things like that, and wondering why I ain't around no more. So that's what I meant by that.
So you knew that you had made a mistake?
Absolutely. I knew going into it I could be making a mistake. But when you're down and out, you don't really focus on the future. You focus on what you need to do now. And it was a certain point in time where I wanted to quit early, but when things start flooding in and people's looking for you for things, you really just can't say, it's over. You can't just stop.
So how did you end up in this program?
Well, I heard that you'll be able to get contact visits with your kids. So that's something that I liked.
There was an incentive there.
Yeah, so I figured like, and then I heard about the Thinking for a Change program and all the extra incentives that the program offers as far as career opportunities. So I feel like that's something that I need to take up.
And what are you hoping to do? What career path would you like to take at this point?
Well, I'm currently in the mechatronics program, as you stated before. That's kind of like basic level, entry-level engineering. And hopefully I'll get my associate degree in that and then transfer to a four-year institution and get my bachelor's degree in engineering.
We are talking about the collaborative program run by the Allegheny County Jail with Pittsburgh Mercy Health System, which was recently evaluated by the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C., and found to successfully reduce recidivism. Our guests are, whom you just heard, Darrell Robinson from the Point Breeze area of Pittsburgh, repeat offender, currently on work release and going through the collaborative program. And also with us is Karen Cordero, team leader, Prevention Intervention Services for Pittsburgh Mercy Health System. To join the conversation, our number, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Lots of folks wanting to join the conversation. Let's go to Carol in Pittsburgh. Carol, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question regarding adolescent and juvenile sentencing. Pennsylvania has the highest rate in the country of juveniles that are sentenced as adults. And I'm curious to know whether or not these cognitive behavioral approaches that are evidence-based and have been studied with adult populations are something that is also useful to young adults who are in large numbers in the prison system in Pennsylvania. And the second part of that question is, I noticed when Mr. Robinson was just speaking, he said, you know, when you're down and out, you don't really focus on the future. And that's also such a feature that's inherent to anybody who's an adolescent, whether or not you have had criminal behavior or not. And so I'm just curious if the adolescent brain development features impact whether or not this type of recovery program is useful for young adults who are being released from prison.
It's a great question, and mm-hmm. and I'll let you answer that, Karen. But it does bring to mind this idea that studies have been done about adolescent men. We've all been there, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. those of us who are males. And apparently, that is a time in your life when you don't always make the best decisions.
Right. Well, adolescent men and females don't always make the best decisions. you know, if you think about it, the brain doesn't fully develop until you're about 25. So, you know, you don't have that executive branch actually helping you through the long range outcomes that you're supposed to be thinking about that we think about when we're adults. But to answer the question, do these cognitive behavioral techniques work in adolescents? And my answer to that is absolutely. Now, our program is not working with adolescents. About, I want to say, a year or so ago, we did have the juvenile court judges come through and tour our program, and they knew right away about Thinking for a Change. When they saw my group, they were like, that's what we're using, and they have been using it.
412-246-2002. Carol, thank you for that call. Let's go to Kathleen. Kathleen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from White Oak, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I'm currently a student at Geneva College. I'm studying in human resources management. I'll complete my program on October 15th, 2014. And I have a question I want to ask. How can human resources professionals assist in finding employment for men and women who have been in prison, who have now been released, and all need work? Like Home Depot, I know they hire people. Well, how about Walmart, Kmart, the corporations, U.S. Steel, Westinghouse? How can we get them and influence them to take a chance. I mean, maybe not, you know, from Darrell's point of view, you know, Darrell just wants a chance. All he wants is a chance to work. And how can we make them understand that these people made mistakes and now they're ready to get on with their lives? They've paid their dues and they're ready to get on with their lives.
Well, it's a good question. When you once you get back out there and you have a record, it can be difficult to find a job. So, Karen, how do we deal with that?
Well, this is something that comes up in our groups all the time where, men in our groups will say, you know, well, now I have a felony, you know, so I'm not going to get a job anyway. And that's the kind of thinking that we focus on as being risk thinking. If you stay in that thinking, you're going to feel defeated. You're not even going to try.
But and just to play devil's advocate mm-hmm. here, I mean that. I mean, they're looking. They're staring at a certain reality there.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand what you're saying that can be that's negative thinking if you're stuck on that thought. But they're also bringing up a very realistic question: is that how do I not only get past that stigma myself, but get a potential employer or even somebody else that I want to have in my life get past that stigma as well.
Well, that's why we have phase one and phase two programming where we're following people after they leave the jail. We're trying to give them the skills so that, like what Darrell's going through, he'll have this associate's degree. He can go for licensing. He's studying to be an engineer. So that if he goes to a future employer and they say, okay, yeah, we see that you had this past, but you also have this. And it's also showing that he's made a choice to do something to turn his life around. That's somebody you want to take a risk on.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking about the collaborative program run by the Allegheny County Jail with the Pittsburgh Mercy Health System and other entities recently evaluated by the Urban Institute and found to successfully reduce recidivism. We'll get to some of the numbers here on how this program has been, on how successful this program has been. Karen Cordero, Team Leader, Preventive Intervention Services for Pittsburgh Mercy Health System, with us in Studio A, along with Darrell Robinson from the Point Breeze area of Pittsburgh, a repeat offender currently on work release and going through the collaborative program. And we're awfully glad to have you in studio to put a face and a voice to this issue instead of dwelling on just numbers and statistics. Let's go to Josh in Carnegie. He is joining us at 412-246-2002, which is the number you can call to join the conversation. Josh, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me. I'd like to preface this by saying for the last 10 years, I've been hiring individuals with barriers to employment through more than one company. Last year, we won the Goodwill Power Work Award specifically for our commitment to the individual who's experienced incarceration, addiction, homelessness, extreme poverty. Through the years, what we do is paint steel to change lives in my current incarnation at EnviroSafe, an industrial coating facility in Carnegie. We hire generally from the Renewal Center, various community correctional facilities I've hired out of the PERC program. And what I found is that although we can give a skill set that leads to a living wage, we can provide the pathway and the support to get to the end of the day, we have great success when the individuals are still incarcerated. However, once they leave and they hit the instability of the current three-quarter house system or they're dumped into the community without a lot of family support, those instabilities destroy our employees. And as an employer, we'd like to keep our employees long-term. And unfortunately, as the system's currently set up, we've not been able to achieve a great deal of long-term employment. So how are you addressing the instability that occurs between the release from the Allegheny County Jail and the great programs that you're providing access to and total freedom and maybe that inability to completely adapt to society without structure?
Good question.
Very good question. And I absolutely agree with you. I think sometimes the hardest part comes after release. That's when you're back in your own environment and you're bound to get caught up in old thought processes. That's what our phase two program or the aftercare program is designed to deal with, where we follow people for 7 months after they've been released, not just Pittsburgh Mercy, but all the other organizations within the collaborative. And it's about keeping people connected, staying in the skills that they learn when they're in reentry, when they're in the jail, or that Drell's learning in his program.
How does it work? What do you do? When you talk about aftercare and following up and mm-hmm. keeping in touch, what exactly is being done?
Well, for our program, that's the Breaking Free Power of Choice, which Pittsburgh Mercy developed on their. Our team developed the program. We actually have patented that title. Pittsburgh Mercy has the patent on that, Breaking Free. So Breaking Free is designed to help people after they're released stay in a support network system with our forensic peer specialist, who is someone who has already been through this, and he's been successful for quite a while. He's been a part of the group that's working with Darrell. His name is Carlton Waller. And we keep them engaged in practicing those skills so that I know if I have this choice where people are drawing me back into the street, I can identify that as this is a risk. I'm going to end up right back in jail. My new way of looking at this is if I stay in this job, you know, and it's great to hear from somebody like this who's willing to give people a chance, you know. So the new thinking behind that would be if I stay in this job, it may be tough now and I may have things pulling me financially or just even family or just the street calling me. That's going to take me someplace I don't want to go. And it's recognizing that and remembering it, staying in those skills and using those skills. So we're trying to support people when they are released as well.
Josh, thank you for that call. Darrell, have you thought about what it might be like when you get out?
Every day. Absolutely.
And have you thought in terms of what the temptations might be that might lead you to hopefully not, but possibly make the same mistake?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what, as Karen was saying, that's what the program is about. It's about identifying that risk thought and eliminating it. It's about knowing cognitive self-change and recognizing that risk thought and absolutely just eliminating it from any possibility. Like there's times, because I'm currently residing at Renewal Inc., and there's times we're under a very strict policy, but I'm allowed outside, and there's times I want to deviate, as they will call it, and go get something to eat or go to the store or even go have a drink, drink a beer or something. But knowing that, I know if I do that, that could possibly lead me to trouble and lead me back in Allegheny County Jail. So I believe it is all on individual, and they're willing to change.
And technically, you're on work release, so yeah. You still have to report back. You still have to be, you know, back at night.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the jail. So there are those reminders there of the situation that you're in. You can't get away from that. But as you think about when you get out, do you talk to people like Karen and say, you know, Here's what I'm going to need, or have you just thought to yourself, here's my list of things I'm going to need in order to be successful after I get out of the Allegheny County Jail?
Yeah, I have a strong support and staff with my family, like they're behind me 100%, and I use my kids as motivation to succeed. So
that's a pretty good incentive right there.
Absolutely.
We are talking with Darrell Robinson, who is, again, from the Point Breeze area, repeat offender, currently on work release, going through the collaborative program that we've been talking about. Also with Karen Cordero, team leader, prevention intervention services for Pittsburgh Mercy Health System. Let's go back to the phones. 412-246-2002, the number to call to join our conversation. We have Ben in Washington, Pennsylvania. Ben, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me. My name's Ben. I'm a volunteer with the Human Rights Coalition, and we advocate for the rights of prisoners in prison in the Pennsylvania system, and we're actually an organization that was started by prisoners and their family members. And I just wanted to say that I think programs like the one we've been talking about that are reducing recidivism are absolutely crucial, and we need to be thinking about every way that we can reduce recidivism. But I think there's also, there are some like structural issues that we also need to look at that are contributing to recidivism. And so the issue of felony charges, which does prevent people from getting employment after the release, is actually really a huge barrier and something that does lead to recidivism. And there's actually a national campaign called Ban the Box that is calling on employers to take the box that you have to check if you're a felon off of job applications. There's also some other structural issues within the prison system where when we talk about reentry, people who are reentering into their communities, oftentimes they've been disconnected from their communities by being shipped across the state and don't have access to their family. So communication in prison with family is actually really important to preventing recidivism. And there are a lot of reasons that within the prison system, access is very, very restricted because of high prison phone rates and because of visitation rules.
Well, that's a great point. Yeah. And Karen, as you listen to some of the things that Ben has brought up, are those, especially if someone is cut off from their family for whatever reason, but they're going to have to get back into being a member of the community as well as a member of a family or the head of a family, whatever it happens to be. Are there things that you are cognizant of that the program is aware of that are necessary for a smooth transition, which depending on how long you've been away, can't possibly be easy to just, you know, okay, you're going to pick up your life again. That there's got to be more than that in place, doesn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And reentry has more than that in place. Our program is just one piece of it. Some of the other programs dealing with that, one of the parenting programs, if you're involved in parenting and you're learning parenting skills, that's another provider. But then you can have motivation by having contact visits with your children, keeping the family connected while you're inside.
Are there other things that you consider in Darrell's case? Because Darrell, you are the father of two twin boys, and you know, he hasn't been active in the family for a while as the father in the household, as a parent. So, are there things that you are concerned about Darrell and that Karen, you need to help him work with just so that he's able to not only go back and function as an individual but as a father?
Well, that's a great thing about breaking free the power of choice. It's open to whatever issues the group brings up. So if it's a parenting issue, if it's a family issue, they deal with it in that session.
And Darrell, what might have happened to you without this program?
Well, I probably would have came out and resorted to the same thing that got me in trouble in the first place.
Pretty sure about that, sounds like.
Yeah.
That's the way it would have gone.
Because as I speak to repeat offenders that I'm locked up with, they tell me that's what they resort to. So I feel like if I get out and try to go on the right path, going to school, and trying to find a job, and things not working my way, because once you get out, real life hits you. It's time for bills. It's time for transportation. All that thing adds up. And if you can't get that, then you have the conflict from other people in your ear as well. So that's the only thing you know how to do, because you know how to take this and make that.
Karen Cordero, let's look at the numbers, which I promised I would bring up. How successful has this program been in keeping offenders from becoming repeat offenders? How has it reduced the probability of being arrested compared to Allegheny County inmates who were not part of this program?
Those numbers, I believe, were just released on Monday.
Yes, in fact, they were.
Yeah, and I really haven't gone through all of them. The big number that everybody's talking about is by 24 percentage points.
Right, 24 the... the participation in one of the programs reduced the probability of being rearrested by 24 percentage points compared to Allegheny County inmates who were not part of this program. That's one in four. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think this program needs to be tweaked, if at all? Are there some things that need to maybe be done or added?
Well, we're always looking at how to improve the program. You just asked Darrell, you know, what can he do after he's out of this in order to, you know, keep the kind of support going that he has while he's in the program. And that's where I see where our forensic peers, you know, can be a big part of this. When everybody leaves the program, they get contact information, how to stay in touch with our forensic peers. This is a person who has been successful at accomplishing staying out of jail.
And how do you explain how this program or why this program is working where others have failed? What's making the difference here, or what is different about this that maybe wasn't tried before?
Well, I think what was happening before was we were fear-based. We just thought we needed to be tough on crime, that if we put people away and they were somehow magically going to realize there was a consequence for their behavior, we didn't take into consideration all these things that your callers have been bringing up, like, okay, now you're out and you have a sentence and there's been no training, there's been no education, there's been no support. You know, that leaves a person not a lot of choice but to recommit. With learning cognitive-based change skills, you have skills now that no matter where you are in life, you can use every day. A situation that comes up that makes you feel anxious in a certain way, makes you feel depressed in a certain way, you realize you stay in the intensity of that feeling. The choices you make out of that may not be the best choice for you. So now I can deal with this feeling. I can look at the situation differently. I've reduced my level of anxiety somewhat, and I can think a little bit clearer. That's something you can use every day.
Darrell Robinson, are you feeling optimistic? And by the way, when do you get out?
February 2015.
So in just a few months, really.
Yes, sir.
And so obviously you're thinking about that day, and what are your thoughts about what the future holds for you? Are you feeling optimistic?
Absolutely. Because I set some personal goals for myself and some career goals for myself that I'm striving to reach.
And do you have any doubts in your mind about reaching those goals?
No, I just got to stay optimistic, like you said, and believe in myself. And when I'm feeling down, like Karen said, the main focus on the group is to pay attention to your feelings. So that's what I try to focus on, even when I'm in a situation I'm in now, because it can be a little depressing or stressful dealing with a whole different personalities on an everyday basis. So I just try to focus on my feelings, learn how to control them, and make tomorrow better than today.
And know that you have support.
Absolutely.
We have been talking with Darrell Robinson. He is, again, from Point Breeze, repeat offender, on work release, going through the collaborative program, and he'll be rejoining society in February of 2015. Although, this is, you know,
halfway there.
Yeah, right, exactly. And also, I want to thank Karen Cordero, team leader, Prevention Intervention Services for Pittsburgh Mercy Health System. Thank you so much for being with us here in studio, Karen. It's been great.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Coming up, what will the cities of the future look like if we design them with everyone in mind? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.